and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on another beautiful Saturday here at Saratoga. Saturday means really good stakes action. We'll talk a little bit about that more as the show progresses. But I also want to once again remind you over on the front side, it's 10 o'clock now, 11:30. So you still have time to come up and take advantage. 11:30 to 12:30. Autograph session with all the jockeys by the Jockey Silks Room. That will benefit the PDJF, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. That's today, 11:30 to 12:30 up here. Tomorrow across the street at the Harness Track, it's the karaoke, jockey karaoke, always a lot of fun. Also benefiting the PDJF. So a couple of events coming up that you can take advantage of here and benefiting a really worthy racing-related charity. All right, today's show, as I say, we'll talk some stakes action and more because a little bit later on, we'll be joined by David Aragona from Timeform. We'll get some handicapping thoughts from him on today's card a little bit later on. Jason Blewett, now with West Point Thoroughbreds. We'll have Jay come in and talk a little bit about some of the West Point horses that are coming up maybe here and around the country as well because, hey, well, we've got to mention a little flight line, right, out in Southern California. Looking forward to seeing him coming up a little bit later on this summer. But we kick things off today with our friend Marshall Graham. Whenever he's in town, we like to get him plugged in, and he's headed out shortly, so had to get him in before he got back to the real gig down a little further south. But Marshall, good morning.
Great to be here. I think thanks for having me on. Well, the weather's really turned for us, and it's a gorgeous morning at the spa.
And I kind of alluded to it. We were talking the other day. You're now kind of a summer resident up here, too.
Yeah, I when I won the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge in 2020, I bought a house up here, and now I'm a college professor at Rhodes College, and so I'm on a college schedule, and we get done in May. And I come up here, I've been here since May 29th. So to me, in part, when racing season starts, it gets sad because I've got to go back. My kids are on a Southern schedule. We start teaching and I start having meetings in mid-August. So this is my last weekend at Saratoga. I'm going to hit the road Tuesday with my daughter, my cat, and my dog, and make the long drive back to Memphis. And then I will sneak back up for the Travers and excited about that. I've never been to the Travers.
Oh, really?
Really excited to go.
Yeah. Well, you'll have a great time, but I'm sure you realize that from now being kind of a resident. And that's funny, you bought the house with the contest money because you are a contest player. We'll hit on that in a second. But you mentioned Rhodes College. What is your specialty down there? But also talk about the class that I think everybody would like to take.
Yeah, so I'm an economics professor, and I've been chair of the economics department. I've been at Rhodes really since I got my PhD at Texas A&M, and I teach a lot of different classes, econometrics, intermediate macroeconomics, sort of the typical economics fair, but we've introduced these half courses, courses that last part of the semester, not full classes, and we can delve into topics of our interest, and I teach the economics of racetrack wagering markets. And so it's a horse racing class, and again, there's a lot of economics, finance, psychology, statistics in horse racing. We look at betting pools. We look at decision making. We do some modeling. We model pace. We model track bias. But you know, kids also learn to handicap races, and we have a handicapping contest in the class. So it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy teaching it. This semester I taught it on Fridays, 2 to 3:15. It was in the winter, so it was corresponding with winter racing at Oaklawn Park. And that's sort of our focus is Oaklawn, but we really deep dive into Oaklawn in terms of building our models and looking at the racing there. But then we branch out and talk about racing broadly. And one thing has changed since the pandemic. I really changed the way I teach. I used to be a fairly you know, fairly pure lecture. I would lecture in any of my classes you take. I'd lecture, and we'd have exams. And now what I do, and I, as a result of the pandemic, is they pre-watch my lectures. I quote unquote flip the classroom. Yeah. So I record my lectures. They watch them before class. And in a class like intermediate macroeconomics, they watch my recorded lectures. And then in class, we do homework assignments. We go through current events. And I call on them and question them about the material. So it's much more interactive. So for my horse racing class, I did the same thing. I pre-recorded lectures. I pre-recorded interviews. I interviewed trainer. I interviewed Tom Van Berg and Kendrick Carmouche. Interviewed buyer speed figure makers, Dick Girardi and Randy Moss. Interviewed some handicappers as well. And so it's a way to bring outside speakers sort of into my class. And then in class, so they had the pre-recorded videos on the materials. They had the interviews. Then in class, we watched races. We dissected races. You know, we talked about all these sorts of issues that were covered in the lecture. They asked me questions, and so it was really interactive. So it was a lot of fun. Still a learning experience. It was 75 students, which is certainly the largest class at Rhodes, and the largest class I can remember. Rhodes is about 2,000 students, a little liberal arts college. So it was a little bit big and unwieldy. I've got still working on putting it together, getting it sort of fully where I want it to be, but a lot of fun. Third time I've done it. I've done it every 2 years. I'd love at some point to make it more publicly available to everybody, but I'm still, my students are still guinea pigs for this, and some of them walk in the class not knowing anything about racing. I get a ton of international students who take it. I get, there's a pretty good gender breakdown. You know, horse players tend to be majority male, right? And the class is still similar that way, but still a good percentage female, male, a lot of international students. So a lot of people who, you know, not only know nothing about horse racing, but know nothing about gambling at all. So
that's interesting. What's the impetus for them taking the course?
I think that they're just excited to learn about something new and different. And this year, so when I taught in previous years, I've had 36 and 40, which are good numbers. But this year is a result of the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, which I didn't publicize, but they all knew about it. They all knew. I mean, after that happened, you know, there was the prof that won $500,000. So I think all of them got excited, therefore, to enroll in my class on the topic. So so I think that was part of it. And again, if you teach something that you're passionate in, they knew they were taking a course that I knew a lot about and, certainly was different from whatever they offered. It was going to be something that they would enjoy. So, again, it was a lot of fun. Can't wait to do it again.
I want to take that course because we were talking off topic with Mick, our guy behind the camera and whatnot, afterwards, and mentioning your daughter and going to college and whatnot. And I said I spent a couple years at RPI before going to Syracuse. There was no course like that either, RPI or Syracuse. Not that I didn't have the racing form hidden in my books, but.
Well, I do worry about sometimes what parents might think because I have a student who's a rising senior in economics now, Patrick Reddick. And he enjoyed the class, got interested in racing, and is now walking hots for Al Stahl here at Saratoga, living in the tack room. So it's great that, you know, again, I know a lot of these kids, may not get in the racing, and certainly, you know, they'll be busy with their jobs, but at some point they might come back to it, right? At some point, for me, I was very in the racing growing up. You get to high school, you get to college, you get busy. You don't have the income to come and, you know, spend your summers at Saratoga or do whatever like that. I was where there wasn't racing, right, in Texas at the time, and then in Memphis. And then, as you get to positions, you move up, make a little bit more money, get a little more free time, then you come back. And that's what I hope for these kids.
But
it's a lot of fun to do. And, again, a lot of things in our sport, in handicapping, that are so related to all these different fields, not just economics, but finance and psychology and statistics. And so there's a lot of things that we can bring in.
Yeah, and I will tell people to pick up your Twitter feed as well. And what the Twitter feed is?
Truxton Stables. I don't even use Truxton Stables anymore except for breeding with my mare Aunt Dot Dot. So I should update it to like DGen Econ Prof or something. But right now it's Truxton Stables. Truxton was the favorite racehorse of Andrew Jackson. It was our initial stable name. Until we went to 10-stripe racing.
And I recommend that because you crunch a lot of numbers and come at racing at a different angle, sometimes looking at those numbers, and it's fun just to follow and see what you're writing about. And I want to get to one of those topics in a moment, but before that, we've already mentioned the contest. Talk a little bit about the BCBC. I always think it's fun to kind of see how people won and what happens, and as you get to the last few races, talk about the win and getting to those last few races and getting over the finish line?
Well, it was kind of amazing sort of experience, and to beat my friend Jonathan Kinchin by a nose, made it even more fun. He came back and finished second, so I guess he's got the 2 second places finishes over me. I've got the beating him by a nose, but going into the BCBC, I knew I was going to go all in on Montemore Girl. I was very confident that Montemore Girl was going to win her race, and knew I was going to get somewhere around even money because of the McPeak horse. So I figured that was the point where I would double my money, and then I thought in the last race I was going to focus on Authentic, and I ended up, since I had a little bit more money than I thought, I used Authentic, Improbable, and Tom Zay Tot and Exactas. If it was Improbable, Tom Zay Tot, either way, I'd have had a good day, maybe finished top 10, but Authentic, either above those two or below those two, was going to put me in a position to win the contest. It turns out if Improbable won, Jonathan's total would have been so big that I'd have finished second, but I got a sort of perfect outcome for me. I actually got rolling a little bit early with VQuist. I had VQuist on Friday, won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. It was a Parks horse, Butch Reed trained, and I thought was getting overlooked. I was thinking about early on going all in on VQuest to put me in a position where maybe I could just bet Authentic to win or, do something a little safer. But I also didn't want to be out of the contest because many ways I looked at it, I knew that even if I just sort of made very small bets or show bets all the way in, I could double the Montemore Girl and then use Key Authentic and Exactus. So, I made a good bet on VQuest. It put me up to fifth on Friday, and then open things up to be very relaxed, take some shots on Saturday to try to open things up. But it was good in 2020. In 2021, just never really got going. Kept going backwards, got back into a little bit of contention with the Japanese horse that won the Philly and Mare Turf, and then wasn't creative enough to get the Exacta in the classic.
But so,
but that's how it goes. But the win, often you end these with zero or up there.
It's
right?
funny so. That way because you're taking shots, and I would love to play more contests than I do, but I know the feeling is you have the day or you don't have the day, and you want to be able to be in there to have a few days, and that's all you need, just to have the right day when you're playing the contest. And have you qualified this year, BCBC or NHC?
I have qualified for NHC. I love going to NHC. All my friends do. It's like a horse player convention. Yeah. I love the dinners and everything involved. I think the contest itself is a total crapshoot, right? It's I don't know that 57 races or 36 races to get to the cut, and then another 17 really sort of establish. It's really sort of advantageous to the professional players, and probably still not enough randomness. So it's a very challenging contest. I'm in awe of the people who have success there, right? They really have to be, cover a lot of ground, a lot of different tracks. And I'm I play a lot and probably more than a casual player, but not a professional player. And there's certain tracks I don't look at. And to be honest, I'm sort of a niche player. And I realize that up here at Saratoga. I mean, I like dirt races and I really like dirt route races. So, when I look at the form, I will glance through turf races. But mainly I'm on dirt, and so it kind of precludes me from playing pick fives, and it makes contests like that where the win place contests are really difficult. So for things like a BCBC, instead of looking at trying to figure out what I'm doing 17 races or whatever, how many Breeders' Cup races we have, I focus on the
yeah. It sounds like you're kind of mapped out before you even.
Oh yeah, I think about it. I think about. Even today, like, how am I going to bet the two or three races I want to bet? Because, I enjoy watching turf racing, and if I see something, I'll bet it. I really struggle with handicapping turf racing, in part because I do think it probably involves a lot of replays. You never really know what the pacing area is. I sort of challenge my friends who love turf more than dirt is to press pause on their DVR, right, as they're going around the turn and tell me who's going to win, right? Because even when they flash up the fractions, you don't know whether that's fast or slow, right? Because often there's timing issues, and when they move the rail you don't really know the run-up. And so on a dirt race, you have a good feel for what has happened, right, and where the horses might be and what the pace is. And so the dirt races, I think, tend to work better with numbers. The speed figures are made more accurately. So all those things kind of reflect my interests and what I'm good at. And while I enjoy watching races, the taking trip notes and studying races and watching race flows like that, it's not my forte. Don't really have time for that either.
Yeah, and it's probably a good note for and I think during the season, people are watching us or maybe getting into the game and new to the game, it's a good note. Try to figure out what your strengths are and play into that a little bit more. And again, college professor, you study the numbers and whatnot, a contest player, but with 10 strikes, also an owner. And I pulled up some of the performances either in review or preview to look at. I saw you before the Birdstone the other day, a mile and three quarters, Original Intent, who had won the Trail's End down at Oaklawn at the mile and three quarters twice. You don't often see a mile and three quarters specialist. Fearless maybe had a little bit of a class edge, and Luis Saez really was working the horse and got it done. Fearless, the number one horse, but a nice late run from your horse, Original Intent, the number three.
Horse ran so well. I'm so proud of the horse. We didn't know if we fit, right? I mean, we came up here. We claimed the horse for $8,000. Bentley Combs was the trainer. He pitched the horse to me in September of 2020 when we claimed the horse, when it was in at Churchill, I think. And I said immediately, this looks like a Trail's End horse. And we got him. Clearly, a mile and 16th was too short. He finished fourth and fifth. And again, these are in claiming races. But we got, there was a series of long races at the fairgrounds that year. Mile 9/16th, starter race on the dirt. And start races on the turf there, one was rained off. So he won a mile 9/16 on the turf, mile 9/16 on the dirt, came back and won the Trail's End, which is my favorite race. It's a mile and three quarter starter 10, right? And he won it last year, had a suspensory, so gave him time off, came back this year. And again, we're running in races too short. Didn't get the greatest trip, so we bought him up here, in fact, running a mile 3/8 start at Aqueduct, and was a little bit too far back, and his mile and a half race at Oakland got stopped when he made a run, but won the Trail's End again, purses $125,000. We ran him at Parks in a really, really tough mile and a half starter 8, where four other horses came back to win, and he ran so well that day, he had a tough trip, ran wide. We'd always circled the Birdstone because the mile and 3/4 distance. We didn't know whether we fit. It's funny to think if you were taking an $8,000 claim, a starter 8 horse, and running him in a 6-furlong stakes race, they might not take your entry, but we knew he was good at the distance. We were just hoping our horses would fit with these. Never in my wildest dreams would we be rounding the turn nose and nose with Lone Rock, with seemingly Fearless, you know, they were really, size really riding Fearless. Seemingly Fearless is going backwards. I thought for a second we were going to win.
Yeah.
We went really wide. I can't figure out. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe Rosario took him out so as not to engage. Maybe the horse wasn't going by, so took him out not to engage and try to get by. You always worry when horses bear out, whether it's a soundness thing or a jockey strategy thing. But ran really big. I was making up ground on past Lone Rock, who's been the stalwart of the division. And I could not be more excited and thrilled. I certainly would have cried had I gotten in the winner's circle. I love that horse. I love distance racing. The Birdstone's really the newer version of the Saratoga Cup, which they used to run. And I really wish they would bring back Cup racing. I wish they'd make an Eclipse Award for stayers. They ran the Pimlico Cup at like 2.25 or 2.5 miles. I'm glad they have the TAA race at Breeders' Cup. It'll be a mile and 5/8. I really now think after our second place finish, we can take on those kind of horses.
Yeah, yeah.
So my guess is we'll go to the Greenwood at Parks. It's a mile and a half. They did not bring back the Grand Prix de Jockey Club here at a mile and 5/8. I hope they bring it back for the winter, because it having it at the same time as the Greenwood didn't make a lot of sense. So I'm hoping they bring it back for Aqueduct winter. I think this division, I really think it's a good thing for racing. These horses race, have long careers, make a number of starts, and instead of adding another Breeders' Cup race, it's a juvenile turf sprint and grabs a full field of Euros, so the Europeans pay nomination fees. Let's reward these horses for going these long distances, and let's encourage races to be written longer, right? It's too bad our classic distance of a mile and a quarter is now considered an anomaly, right? And so, all that being said, I love the horse and excited for its future and I feel like we now fit and really so really proud of the job and thrilled with the job that Bentley Combs did.
Yeah, that was about the eighth pole we started to get going. I thought, oh, this is going to be interesting. I'll tell the guys in the control room, we'll skip the the next replay, we'll go right to Lady Rocket because I want some thoughts on that one. And we're going to watch Lady Rocket. You own that one in partnership with Frank Fletcher. Lady Rocket, this the number three horse. A few weeks ago, winning the Chicago down at Churchill. Equibase still down at Churchill working out. Thoughts on this win in the Chicago and what might be next for Lady Rocket?
Well, this is a huge win. She was coming out of the Ruffian where she'd been beaten pretty soundly.
I should mention running second and third Sconson and Bell's the one.
Yes, So she was coming out of the Ruffian where she'd been beaten pretty soundly by search results. You know, she's always trained well. We were hoping for a big season, and she took losses in her first two races. And, you know, now in retrospect, the loss in search results didn't look as bad as it did at the time, right? You know, we went back to this race at Churchill. She ran huge on the lead, sort of dominating the whole way against a very strong field. I mean, that was a strong field for that race, and so she will go in the Ballerina.
Oh, nice.
And so she's training at Churchill. She'll go in the Ballerina. We're very excited about her chances. Not sure who's going to come up. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely tough. They moved the Ballerina to the day after the Travers. I'm going to my first Travers this year. I actually made my ticket to come back Sunday, but now I got to figure out a way to stretch it out a day. But we're very excited about her. We're obviously thrilled to own horses with Frank Fletcher. He's an Arkansas businessman, has our same objectives of winning big races, but also winning at his home track of Oakland Park. But, you know, we're excited to be up here at Saratoga. Mr. Fletcher had Frank's Rockette,
yeah,
who ran huge the other day. And when we saw him up here, we were already talking about how excited we were that Lady Rocket's going to run. And so should be a good time. I know our partners are excited. She's a horse that we own in our partnership. And she's one that was hurt as a two-year-old. And we loved her as an early two-year-old, but she got hurt. And then we gave her the time, came back with her. It took her a while to sort of get going. But, you know, we do hope there's a grade one somewhere in her future.
Yes, looking forward to that up at Saratoga. And just quickly wanted to hit on a couple of more horses before we let you go. Pull up the Evan Shippen from last year. Had Michelle Giangiulio on after that race when she won a nice stakes race up here at Saratoga for you. Seafoam is going to be the number three horse here. I think, if I remember right, off the claim?
Yeah, off the claim, 18 days back off Christoph Clement. And the horse has been, you know, its form was a little bit dirty and dropped in for 45. Michelle, who'd been losing shakes all summer, wins a two-way shake, and we get Seafoam, you know, wheel him right back in this race, wires the field, and super exciting. It was Michelle's first career win, and of course, a career win in a stakes race at Saratoga.
That's not a bad way to kick
off. No, not a bad way at all. And then he came back and he won on New Year's Eve. In the State Bred Stakes.
Alex Robb.
In the Alex Robb. And they shortened the Shipman from a mile and eighth to a mile. I'm very conflicted. I'm a long dirt race guy. I'm very conflicted over these the new Wilson Chute. So they shortened the race to a mile. We looked at alternatives. So after the Robb, we gave the horse some time. And sort of the horse is now rolling in training. Michelle says the horse is doing great. We've looked at the Alidar. We're gonna look at the Alidar, okay. And we're also looking at the Shipman. The Alidar being a mile and eighth, we may even look at a mile and eighth race out of town. Again, needs the longer distance and the slower pace. But the Shipman is certainly in the decision making process. And the mile races have played pretty similarly to the mile and eighth races. So I don't know. I was very nervous about that change, especially about losing mile and eighth races. I've entered four of them, and none of them have gone. So, but obviously, we're super excited about him. And you know, August 12th, though, you know, we'll have to have the New York Breds dinner, and maybe he'll be a champion older dirt male.
Yeah, very good. And finally, got to mention your runner in the Vanderbilt today. Knee Deep in Snow. We're going to take a look. Going to go back to Keeneland. This is the end of April. Knee Deep in Snow is going to be the number five horse here, getting that win. Subsequently, a second place finish last time, a third in a stake down at Churchill, but the nice win a little earlier at Keeneland. What are your thoughts in the Vanderbilt? You wind up going against last year's champ, the Monster Jackie's Warrior.
Yeah,
what are you thinking this afternoon?
Well, this is the race that this Keeneland race is the race that we claimed him for 80, and it was one of my partners, Corey Molis, pitched the horse to me. He actually sort of did it very timidly. I know 80's a lot. What do you think of this horse? And it was the morning of was the morning of the races. So I looked at it, and 80 was a lot, but we were lucky. It was the weekend. We had, amazingly, I had a horse in earlier on that card in for 50, and that horse got claimed. I was really bummed about that horse getting claimed, but that gave us the money, and so then we had some time in it, and the more I looked at it, the more I liked it. I pitched it to Matt Shire, the trainer, and he was initially cautious, but the more he looked at it, the more he liked it. We pitched to another of our partners, Jeremy Sussman, and so we decided to go in. Matt's actually running around. He's stable at Churchill, but they're running at Keeneland, running around trying to, you know, make the claim himself. So it looked pretty tight. We got it in. We won a 2A shake against John Hancock. And, boy, the horse trains great. He's run, you know, second and third a couple stakes. We were in the Ellis stake on Sunday. It was a 75K purse. First place is 45 grand. We were kind of a shaky favorite in that race. Here, you know, I mean, Jackie's going to be hard to beat, but second place is going to be 70 grand. Third place is 42 grand. You know, hopefully we'll sit a trip. You know, drawing the rail isn't great, but my guess is Jackie's going to go, and maybe the outside horse that they've got to enter as a rabbit will go. I'm not sure anyone will be able to keep up with Jackie, and we can tuck him behind and get a good run. You never know. Maybe, you know, maybe if Original Intent lost by 3/4 of a length going in 1 3/4, then you translate that down. Maybe we lose by 1/4 of a length here, and we have big things to talk about. But we're excited about the horse, and he's training great, and you know, we know we're taking a shot, but you know, even the down, the even second, third, fourth place money is good, and you know, we'll see. You never know. You never know. Maybe Jackie's has an off day, and we can get lucky.
Certainly wish you a lot of luck this afternoon with Knee Deep in Snow and other runners coming up, the Ballerina a little bit later in the meet, and Seafoam, and where you pick the spot there. Normally, the rest of the year, I'm down in the studio handicapping on a normal day, 3 different tracks. Whenever I see 10 strike, I say, hey, that's our friend Marshall Graham.
We're always
rooting for you, doing so up here at Saratoga. Appreciate the visit. Glad we got you in before you headed out of town. We'll look for you to come back on Traverse weekend. But again, appreciate the visit. And before I forget, as a guest, you get dinner at Pinnell's on us. So stop over and grab a little dinner right around the corner at Pinnell's. Little steak's good, the lasagna's good.
Well, I'm a D-Gen double guy, right?
And hey, Pinnell's
apparently the stop on the way, right? Saratoga, perfect. Pinnell's, right? And then Saratoga Harness.
The double header.
So thank you. I very much appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by. Marshall Graham, all right, we'll take a break. Both of them are in the green room. David Aragona and Jason Blewett, they're up next. Stay tuned.
For 4 generations and looking forward to a 5th, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTV is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTV TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTV live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTV TV. OTV TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is 2 bedrooms and 2 baths. Come make a selection in one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Happy to be joined by our next guest. Always like to have a little sit down with David Aragona, the morning line odds maker here for the NYRA tracks, time form and DRF and more. David, good morning.
Good morning. It's a beautiful morning out here. The weather really cooperated.
Yesterday, it was a rocking crowd, because yesterday was kind of nice, too. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there have been a few days where the weather has been a little Saratoga crazy.
Yeah.
There have been two incredible downpours where the sun was blaring.
I know. Yeah. Can never quite predict it up here.
It is absolutely nuts. I mentioned Timeform and DRF. You do some regular stuff, some video stuff and whatnot on the Racing Forum website, correct?
Yeah, I do some stakes previews. Mike Beer, Dan Ailman, they do those as well for races around the country. Also with my Timeform US Speed Figure Maker colleague, Craig Mulkowski, we do some podcasting as well. So you can find all that on DRF's channels.
And I tell people to follow your Twitter feed as well, which is?
At Horse to Watch on Twitter.
And you kind of pick your spots, and I will tip my cap to you. You pick your spots to mention horses, and you're obviously not going to win all the time, but you win fairly often with horses. I have not been noticing that, particularly at this meet. You've been pretty good when you said, hey, I kind of like this horse in here.
I had some success the first week of the meet. A couple of things worked out. City Man and that Forbidden Apple, and I had liked an Italian and the Diana. So getting those two good stakes opinions out of the way was pretty good. But, so you try to find some spots where horses that you feel you like are going to be good value. That's always the goal up here.
And as I said, you're the morning line odds maker, and you get mentioned all the time by everybody who handicaps, because I think as handicappers and public handicappers, I think to a man, we're all like, we wouldn't want that job. But you are recognized as one of the better in the country, and you have to take solace and some pride in that fact, as you should. And I'm just curious as to the nuts and bolts. And when I get people in here from behind the scenes, I do like to get the nuts and bolts of the game with trainers and owners and whatnot. Talk a little bit about the process of making the morning line. And I'm assuming, and you can tell me if I'm right, you get the PPs and you go through and take a look at the entire field. I'm guessing you land on a favorite and start with the favorite and work from there.
Yeah, I mean, I get the PPs, and I try to always look at the races from the public standpoint. I have, like, certain factors that I know really moves the money in Saratoga, so I try to see who the top riders are on, who the best trainers are in the race, and then just who the best horses are, and I try to, you know, combine all of those factors and, yeah, settle on the favorite. Usually I try to kind of get an ordinal of who I think are going to be the top three choices, sort them out, and then I kind of sort the runners into tiers, you know, the ones that are going to take money, the ones that are going to be a little under the radar, and then just, like, the really rank outsiders. And then from there, I'll kind of try to, you know, fill in all the odds and make the points add up as they should.
I will ask your opinion, because I have said now, rest of the year, I'm down in the studio handicapping in the afternoon and getting inserted, and I'm usually looking at three different tracks. And it seems to me the last year and a half, when the betting public likes a favorite, they like a favorite. There are more super short prices, it seems like, over the last year or year and a half than I can remember.
Yeah, if you check a certain amount of boxes, you know, a horse has strong form. If it's for a top trainer, like a Chad Brown, Irad Ortiz combo, it's just like people feel it's a sure thing, and they just really bet those horses down. So, yeah, you tend to see some pretty strong opinions from the public up here. That's really no surprise. The connections that take a lot of money, they tend to do well as well.
I'm amazed even more when I'm doing, like, a B or a C track, and it's a $5,000 conditional claimer. I look up, and horses 1 to 5, and I have it on top, and I will admit it's probably the most likely horse, but 1 to 5 says Secretariat for me, and Secretariat ain't running in a $5,000 conditional claim.
Yeah, I mean, when you're somebody like me who likes to look for value in races, you try to sniff out those 1 to 5 shots that are a little bit vulnerable, because is this horse really 80% to 90% to win this race? It's hard to find those.
Yeah, exactly. And as I say, again, you do a great job. Oh, and I wanted to ask also, and I'm guessing probably the biggest puzzle for you are the races up, well, anywhere, but up here in particular, the 2-year-old first-time starters, where it's a 10-horse field and 5 of them are regally bred. They've attracted 750 or a million at auction. They've worked well at the auction. Those races have to be a real puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, I try to get as much information as I can on those races, looking at pedigrees, trainer stats, and especially watching workout videos when they're available, just to see who's training well, who they're going with in the mornings. Sometimes you'll see something that looks pretty special in the morning, and you'll have a horse that you really want to look forward to. There's actually one of those coming up on Sunday, a filly that's been training really well for Todd Pletcher. So, I mean, those are fun for me to do, but they're a real challenge to kind of, you know, hunt out all that information.
And again, you do a great job. I'm kind of amazed sometimes when I look in the winds up, oh, the public is right there in a race that for me would have been absolutely a complete puzzle to handicap. You wound up, we're going to take a look at the Vanderbilt in a moment, but you wound up 1 to 5 on Jackie's Warrior. I think as far as the betting public, you probably nailed it, but 1 to 5 I would think is, for a morning line, that's kind of an unusual event.
Yeah, I think I've used the 1-9 a couple times. Life is Good got that, I think, in the Kelso last year. But yeah, I mean, when you have a horse that looks like such a standout on paper, you know that the public is just going to go all in on this one. And yeah, he looks like he deserves to be 1-5, and I imagine he'll be that short, if not lower. And it's just really hard to look past him in this race. Really, I'm just looking forward to seeing him run later today and what kind of time he achieves.
Yeah, let's delve into that just a little bit more, because I did pull up a replay from last year's Alan Jerkins, because I did want folks to get a look at that. It was probably, if not the, it was certainly one of the top races last year. Number two will be Jackie's Warrior, but number six, Life is Good. So it was a nice battle down the stretch between those two. And you know, I think you nailed it with the morning line price, because it's last year's champion, but more importantly, including this race, a 4-for-4 record at Saratoga. Jackie's Warrior looks to lay over this field. I said on the earlier show, I think if you're betting into this race as opposed to the horizontals, I think you're going to do one punch exact, and you just have to decide. To me, the one and the two are maybe the ones you choose from to kind of maybe find a little bit of value in the race. But this is one of those where maybe just fun to be a fan and watch Jackie's Warrior.
Yeah, that Jerkins last year, I mean, it proved that he didn't just have the brilliant speed, he also knew how to fight for a victory. And he's probably not going to have to do that today, but it's nice to have a horse, you know, embody both of those attributes, that they have that brilliance and that tenacity, that will to win races. And he's got both of those. Yeah, he just looks like a standout in this race. I mean, yeah, the horse that I think is in really good form right now that might be able to complete the exacta is the number two, Willie Boy. Mm. He's been facing weaker down in Florida, but has just looked really good in those races. And he seems like one of the few that can actually pass horses. A lot of these seems like they're going to be on a futile chase after Jackie's Warrior in the first quarter mile.
Yeah, it's just going to be fun, again, to see the last year's champion and the horse that ran so well in that race last year against Life is Good. That's kind of what Saratoga is all about, to get those kind of performances and champions and whatnot. Now, future champions perhaps in the Jim Dandy. I'd love to hear your opinion, because when I handicapped this race, I went with Early Voting over Epicenter. I could have gone either way. I really like Epicenter. It's that close to me. But I wanted folks to see, and I went back to the Bluegrass. I mentioned on the handicapping show earlier, I wouldn't argue anybody going with Zandon, going back to this Bluegrass win. Zandon here is going to be the number four horse, and I think may slip away at a little bit of value in the five horse field. I tilted towards Early Voting, have it slightly over Epicenter, but I wouldn't argue against Zandon. What do you think of the Jim Dandy?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this race. Just a four-horse field, but you have three of the top three-year-olds in here, so, I mean, it should be a nice battle. I did go with Zandon. I've been a big fan of this horse, really, since his career debut. Obviously, that Bluegrass was super impressive. I think his Kentucky Derby was a deceptively strong effort. I mean, Epicenter got a lot of accolades for being somewhat close to that suicidal early pace, but it's not like Zandon was that far behind him at any point in the race. They were really within about two lengths of each other for the entire running of the Derby, which you wouldn't have thought ahead of time, because Zandon has this reputation as being much more of a deep closer than Epicenter. And I just think the 10 furlongs was maybe pushing Zandon to his limit a little bit. I like this slight cutback to 9 furlongs. And with a smaller field like this, he's not going to have to come from so far back. And I think that turn of foot and finishing speed that he possesses is going to make him dangerous in this race.
Yeah, as I say, I wouldn't argue against anybody taking a shot there, but it's going to be fun. These three, I think, are solid players in the three-year-old division and stand a chance of it kind of stepping forward in the division. What did you think of Cyberknife last week?
He looked pretty good. That was a game victory. Great ride, though, as well, saving ground every step of the way.
Yeah, no question about it. And he's going to be interesting. You know, putting the Arkansas Derby and that one together, he's now firmly in the conversation as well. All right, we're going to have you look at a couple other races today, and we'll kick it off with race number 7. State Bred Maiden Special is going quick 5.5 on the grass. I took a little pop in here with Mr. Chairman. Had a little bit of breeding in there, I thought. Put that one over. Hey, Mack, it's back. Built to Last. I thought the 8 and the 9 at prices were a little bit intriguing as well. I'm interested to see where you went in race number 7.
Yeah, I think you've got some horses in here that are going to take money, like Built to Last, Hey Mack, It's Jack, and Feathers Road, that have the speed figures. They've got the credentials to win this race. They've just kind of already had their chances to break through, and they haven't quite done it yet. So I wanted to go for some of the lightly raced runners, and I actually found one of the horses you mentioned a little bit interesting, that number 9, Ripe for Mischief. Not really sure where the ability was in his first couple starts, because he didn't show much in either of those races, but the turn back, or I should say the 7 furlongs last time with Heeman Harkey aboard, he was really hustled from the inside, and that was a quick pace that completely fell apart. The first time starter that won that race came from, I think, last in a 12 horse field to get up. And he actually was right in the mix until the final furlong when he got tired. Big rider upgrade to Louis Saez. It feels like a horse that's going to appreciate the turn back to 5.5 furlongs.
Yeah, and you're looking at 12 to 1 on your morning line there, and I think you will get a decent little price. I found that one interesting too. I think it's a tough race, but that has the potential to offer up a little bit of fun if you wind up with the correct opinion. The 10th race this afternoon, an allowance, non-winners of one other than, again, on the morning show we've been laughing, $115,000 for non-winners of one. Mile and a 16th on the grass. I went with Capensis, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but with trepidation on a couple of things. Lived up to the big price in the debut, but went off at 5-1 that day. The betting public wasn't absolutely convinced, but certainly validated. Decent buyer number. It's Todd Pletcher, you know, the $2 million price. I put it on top, but I don't think the horse is invincible, and I think the 12 post position is going to be a little something maybe to overcome. So I'm there, but I thought Ricochet was interesting. I had Bay Street Money in the mix, Orchestration. What did you see in the 10th?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how Capensis runs in this race. I took a small shot against him, but he was really impressive in that debut race. I mean, the way that he finished, it's not like the pace was that fast. And I think I was looking at the Trackus data. He came home his final 5/16 in 27-4, which is just a crazy closing fraction. It was a hard turf course, but he showed a lot of turf ability that day. But like you said, it's a wide post. He feels like he's going to take a lot of money for these connections. So I wanted to take a shot against him with a horse that I think is going to get fly a little under the radar. And for me, that's the number 5, Shoddy, Shoddy, Shoddy. He's a horse that I've kind of had a thing for a little while, but he's just a runner that keeps finding trouble. He's had a number of trips in his races. I think he's deceptively improved this year, but kind of got a weird ride to back when, you know, restrained off the pace. And then last time, he clipped heels coming out of the starting gate, was much farther back than I think the connections wanted him. And he's getting a nice rider upgrade to Javier Castellano, who has been riding very well at this meet. I mean, I think he doesn't get, put in that upper echelon of riders these days, like, you know, the Ortiz brothers, Rosario, Luis Saez, but, I mean, he can hold his own riding with this colony.
Yeah, he's had great meets so far. I think currently sitting in 5th amongst a very strong colony, so I agree that it is a nice rider move there with Shoddy, Shoddy, Shoddy. And again, your 12-1 morning line makes that one look fun too. That late pick 4, pick 5 could offer some nice fun value this afternoon. David, we appreciate the visit. Again, David Aragona at Horses to Watch on Twitter, and as I say, I highly recommend that because he's been tossing out some nice opinions during the meet, and we appreciate your stopping by. Also, tell people to pick up or go by drf.com and check out. Are you regularly scheduled there with the stakes previews?
I do two podcasts a week for DRF. I do some videos almost every week. I didn't do them this week, but about every week we do a couple stakes previews from races around the country. So you can find those on DRF's YouTube channel or the website.
Very good. And as a Saturday morning guest, hey, you get dinner at Jacob and Anthony's.
Appreciate it.
So stop downtown.
Thank you.
Have a little dinner at Jacob and Anthony's and enjoy that after the races. And hopefully by the end of the day, you will be flush and enjoy a little Jacob and Anthony's, maybe walk around downtown a little bit. Appreciate the visit.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, David Aragona, we will take a break. When we come back, West Point Thoroughbreds, it's Jason Blewett. He'll step up. We'll talk a little West Point and more. Stay tuned.
Now for the juvenile fillies turf, 14 of them across the track. Sent on their way. And of the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways with Pro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got 8 to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shoving. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shoving. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there, hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the 8 mile way comes, stop shoving. Maria for the run, still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop shoving. Maria. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
chance to chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide, wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish, sir.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, hey, it's Jason Blewett. Jake, thanks for stopping by.
It's been a while, Seth. Good to be on. Tommy, the great Tom Bellhouse, who's a year-round Saratoga resident, said, you haven't been on recently, have you? When you guys needed someone to jump in, I said, it's been a year, Tommy, and I miss our good friends at Capital OTB.
I appreciate that. Catch up with you, or did catch up with you. When we made our Gulfstream visits, when you were down there, and now with West Point Thoroughbreds, and we were talking a little bit before we went on the air. It's been a nice move for you. You had a great gig down there at Gulfstream, certainly very envious, but still it's part of the year down in Florida, and then summertime's up here in Saratoga. Is your wife, is she from the area, from Saratoga proper?
She is from Saratoga proper, went to Saratoga High School, so this is, I mean, literally a homecoming for my wife, Christina. So, look, I say it obviously tongue-in-cheek. I say, you know, it's tough. We do about nine and a half months in Fort Lauderdale, and then the summer, the rest of the year in Saratoga Springs. Someone's got to do it, you know?
That's what, I was on a podcast the other night, and it was one of those hot days, and I told the guys, I was driving home, and it was like, man, it was hot out there today. And then it kind of dawned on me. Somebody, I'll be on the podcast talking about how hot it was, and somebody was in an insurance office all day long, and I was at the racetrack, so
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
ooh,
laying blacktop. Yeah, I lived across the street on Long Island years ago from a guy who had his own, blacktop business, and, you know, I'd get home, hot day at Belmont or something like that in June or July, and then would see him coming home after me and pulling in his driveway and just said, you know, I've been very, very blessed and lucky, and I've always had opportunity. So, you know, no qualms about being able to make a career in this great game.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the transition to West Point, because I know, you know, it's a great, great team over there, so I'm sure you're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tommy and Terry Finley, Tom Bellhouse, Terry Finley and I, we've been friends a long time. So Terry, again, the short of it is, Terry approached me late in 2020 out of the blue. You know, I wasn't looking for a career change. I was really happy working for the Stronach Group down at Gulfstream. They treated me great, and it was a pleasure to work there. But when Terry offered me the spot and said, look, we got an open spot, you're the guy, I think this will be great for you. You know, my wife and I thought about it, pulled the trigger. I was telling you, I don't know what expectations I had when I took the job in February of 2021, other than it not wanting to go poorly or being terrible at sales, but any expectations I would have had my first year and a half, they've been exceeded. Great company, great people, the partners are great, and then you look around and you've got 100 plus horses that are now, you know, my heart and soul and my children from New York to California, and the flight line coming along. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. You get into the game and all of a sudden you're tied in with the flight line, who we'll talk about in a couple of moments. Whenever I have one of you guys on, you, Terry, Tom, I always tout the website, westpointthoroughbreds.com. You can Google it and find it, but it gives great information, certainly the partners, but if you're just kind of thinking, hey, what's a partnership like, or you want to follow the game a little bit, it's great information there, certainly. And relate, because I'm sure so far on the meet there have been plenty of them, partners, West Point partners, and how much fun it is for them to be involved up here at Saratoga in particular.
Yeah, I mean, it's a family vibe in general, no matter what the calendar, month of the calendar says. And that's something when I took the gig that really appealed to me and how I think I'm just wired as a person. But look, I mean, this is a special, special place. The one track I can think of, the only track, in fact, that I feel like everybody truly feels like they own a piece of Saratoga and Saratoga Racecourse. So look, to be up here and you're with your fellow partners and you're with the Finleys and myself and Tommy, it's a special 7 weeks or so we get to spend up here. And we're out every morning, Wednesday through Sunday, for training. Tommy gets here at 5:30. I'll roll up with the golf car at about 6 a.m. And look, I mean, you get to, what's better than hanging out and having the access to go see your horse train on the backstretch of Saratoga? There's nothing better.
Yeah, and, you know, from talking to West Point folks, I know everybody has a lot of fun. And I will say, if you're sitting out there and you're kind of new to the game and you're thinking, hey, boy, that would be fun to be in a partnership, as they say, you can visit the West Point website. But they're all levels of partnerships, and they all have a lot of fun. But I know from standing when you guys are in the race stand and down by the big screen downstairs in the clubhouse and watching all of the West Point folks, people are into it and they're having a lot of fun being out in the paddock and hopefully in the winner's circle as well. Speaking of that, on West Point related, when you came up, you said that your namesake coming up on Wednesday, that has to be a lot of fun. I had a couple of years ago, Mike Deeney had a horse named Merrill. And it was running down at Monmouth, and I walked up to him, and I knew it was not on. I said, "Where'd the name come from?" He said, "Well, it's Gaelic for merman." So who knew?
Did you know? And you had no idea, last name Gaelic.
I had no idea, and I followed it, and I had kind of a short career, and I was kind of following. And of course, at big prices, nothing. And then the day it wins, it paid like $320. So there was no kind of payoff there.
Right.
But it has to be a lot of fun. Blew it, of course, Mike Rapoli, right?
Yeah.
Named it. In honor of you, very good.
He did.
I had Mike on the show yesterday. He's great.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised he's still not sitting here talking.
Well,
we had
another 30 minutes after the show out in the grass.
I don't doubt it. No, I mean, Mike, in late 2017, I'll never forget it, texted me. I was in my old office now at Gulfstream Park getting ready for the day's races, doing what you do. And he said, I have a New York bred homebred by Uncle Mo. Think he's a stakes quality New York bred colt. You're going to love the name. So obviously the response is, well, what's the name? And then he told me, and I was just like, wow. And remember calling my then girlfriend, now wife, Christina, my parents, and it's been amazing. It's hard to put it into words how awesome it's been watching him. And he's had such a lengthy career, and he won up here the last race. He was in Mike's colors. He was claimed away from Todd and Mike for $25,000, and he won and got to walk him into the winner's circle. It was one of the highlights of my life. And I thought at the time, you know, then come September, it looked like his form had tailed off, and I was in contact, or Mike and I were talking about maybe claiming him back and finding him a home. I don't want him on my property. I don't have the room for it, but I will take care of him for the rest of his life. But I went from thinking, all right, his career looks like he's just lost a step and he was on the verge of his 8-year-old birthday. And then he got to Aqueduct and went on a tear and really had this renaissance. So he's in with the Toscanos now, and they've done a great job with him. And I'm, believe me, I am pumped to see him in race 7 on Wednesday. David Aragona, when he got off the stage, I said, what price you make my horse? 5-2.
Yeah, so very good. Very
he's
good.
Live.
So we'll be watching for him on Wednesday. But let's get to some of the West Point horses. I pulled up a few that we can maybe look forward to. One in particular we'll get to in a moment. But pulled up, went back to the fairgrounds in February for a Cavalry Charge. This was a nice win. Cavalry Charge in here, if I can read, the one horse, but notable running second. Number 6 at Hamo. At Hamo last week won the United Nations. So this was a nice race going back a few races for Cavalry Charge down at the fairgrounds. But it looks like maybe you're going to head down to this special day at Churchill Arlington Million with Cavalry Charge?
Yeah, it sounds like that's going to be the plan. He's based in Kentucky at Churchill. That's his home base with Dallas Stewart. 35-1 in this race. And, you know, a lot of races, especially when they're your horses, like, as random as it sounds, like, I'll just remember, like, oh, I was I was at Gulfstream and that horse happened to run. Like, I remember watching that race on my iPad, sitting on my living room couch, and I didn't, truth be told, I didn't think he had a prayer in that race. He was almost 40-1, and I mean, he just fought, and that, there's two things I really like about Cavalry Charger, maybe three. The first of which is he's gotten better the older he's gotten. So it's neat having a horse who you can kind of just let develop, and you give him the time and you're patient in that regard. He's got that high cruising speed you saw. He doesn't like to be passed. And then along those lines is, I think his maybe his biggest weapon is just that tenacity and moxie that he's got. He will fight and just lay his body down. So I like horses like that.
Yeah, holding off at Hamo was certainly a bonus. Came out of a is coming out of a second place finish last time in a stake over at Horseshoe Indianapolis, and I got the name right because it's written right down because I keep calling it.
I just call it Indy Grand, and I think it sounds cooler than Horseshoe.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
First Captain, when you sat down, I was talking a little bit about this one. You said he was just working out the game plan for him. I guess it's going to be a Jockey Club Gold Cup. We pulled up, going back to May, the Pimlico Special. It will be number 8 First Captain getting it done. But give us the update on the workouts and what is next for First Captain.
Yeah, absolutely, Seth. So he breezed this morning, and this was a great win. Again, I was home watching this just once again on that same iPad, and
Pimlico Special.
Yeah, no, what an honor winning this race. Yeah. I mean, I'm being 100,000,000% serious. The list of winners in this race, including Cigar, who's one of my all-time favorites, and it looked like he was going nowhere on the turn, and once they straightened away, I mean, you've got Hercules up in the irons and Luis Saez, who's so strong, and just to watch him surge and nip Todd's two horses there on the wire to win a race that's just steeped in prestige and history was great. Lost a heartbreaker closing weekend at Belmont to Dynamic One, who's beaten him twice. Mike loves breaking my chops. He's a Rapoli Viola horse, but ran great in the Suburban and breezed well this morning, and you'll see First Captain up next in the Grade $1 million Jockey Club Gold Cup here Labor Day weekend.
Was he here or over across the street?
No, he breezed actually on the main track, came across at 8:45 right after the break, and both he and we've got a two-year-old by honor code named Ohana Honor, who's with Shug, who may run here in the next couple of weeks. Look for him on a Saturday. He breezed right after First Captain, and I know Shug's really happy with the captain, and Shug has been very pleased with Ohana Honor.
Ohana Honor is the name we should
And he's by honor code, yeah.
All right, yep. All right, very good. And we can't let you get away, or anybody from West Point get away without talking a little Flight Line, and we're going to pull up the Metropolitan Mile here, the number one Flight Line getting it done. What's the chart margin? 6 lengths here. Speaker's Corner breaks Speaker's Corner's heart. Speaker's Corner winds up running 3rd in here. Just, again, another incredible, phenomenal performance from Flight Line. Now 4 for 4. They have all been incredible performances, and more notable, perhaps, he was bought right around the corner, right down the street. So that adds a little intrigue for those of us up here at Saratoga. But talk a little Flight Line, Met Mile, and next Pacific Classic.
Yeah, the P Classic's up next. In fact, a Flight Line, and here he is in deep stretch. And I'm a huge Speaker's Corner fan. I love Godolphin and Bill Mott. So I was worried, rightfully so. I mean, you got to respect the competition, but to see him run right by Speaker's Corner and draw off to win a race like the Metropolitan, it doesn't get any better than that on Belmont Stakes Day. And we had the whole West Point team. That was one of the highlights of my entire 44 years. As an aside, I was saying, you know, I get to talk about Flight Line and my job being up here now daily, which is great. Starting for West Point, though, in February of 21, and then you fast forward 2 months, and you have Flight Line and First Captain debut on the same day, and to have them as sort of like the West and East calling cards is spectacular, and it really is an honor. But a Flight Line breeze this morning at about 6:30 a.m. Pacific time at Del Mar. They closed the track. He and his workmate for John Sadler breezed from the gate, and I got the report because I had to have it for everybody here. The fine folks at Capital OTB worked really well, and John is like beyond pleased with Flight Line. So the Pacific Classic, BC Classic are next for him.
And I mentioned he was bought right down the street here. Just give us a little update on so far this year at the auctions for West Point. I mean, you guys play in the yearling auctions, the two-year-old auctions, and how things worked out.
No, things worked out great, and I was not that I'm a financial genius or anything, but given like the overall macro look at the world and the stock market and everything, yeah. It was in the back of my mind.
Yeah, again.
I know I'm a rookie on this side of the aisle, but no, it was fantastic. We bought over 30, 32-year-olds, right around 30, give or take, between the March and April sales and a couple in May and June, and they sold out like hotcakes, and got to thank the partners for that. There's no West Point Thoroughbreds without our great partners, and I mean, we've got our name attached to, I think it's 65 two-year-olds now between yearlings and horses we bought in the springtime. So we're loaded for bear, which is super exciting.
And I assume you'll be participating up the street. And I don't know. We're probably still, about a week away from horses actually showing up to take a look at?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's August 8th and 9th, yeah. I think, are the 2 dates. So, yeah, we're getting, dude, I mean, the Whitney weekend, we're 7 days out.
Yeah. No, so we'll look for you, maybe raising your hand over there, and maybe, who knows, maybe get another flight line. I don't know if that's possible.
But I don't know. That's the dream, though. This is a game of dreams, and hope springs eternal. Yeah. So, and that's the beauty. Whether you're buying a horse that costs $10,000 or a horse that costs seven figures, you're hoping you got a horse like Flightline or American Pharaoh or Tis the Law. So.
No, people are just as happy in a Saratoga Winner's Circle, whether it is the bottom level flamer or the stakes race. And you guys have some nice ones coming up, as noted, here and elsewhere. So, Jay, appreciate the visit. Good luck to you and everybody at West Point going forward. Really appreciate your stopping in. And as a guest on the morning show, hey, dinner at Jacob and Anthony's on us. So enjoy a little dinner downtown. And after a day at the races, that's a good way to wrap things up.
Great spot. Really great spot. My wife and I, when we had just met, that was one of the first places we had a dinner date at. So it always have a special significance, and I appreciate this. Yeah. Very unnecessary, but I say it every time I see you, but having grown up downstate and then spending summers up here from my NYRA days on, just the level of customer service and just passion for the game and effort and caring that Capital OTB puts in for their fans and customers. And we're all fans of the game. We all love racing. I mean, it really is. And my experience in terms of like OTB companies or regions, it's unprecedented.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. I said it on the handicapping show before. Normally I'm down in the studio all year long and you get no feedback, but coming up here, the fans and before I got on the air, I was a fan, and it's just, this is really unique that we're able to be out here throughout the whole meet and bring in people like you and some of the other players in the game. So we really appreciate the visit this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Ohana Honor, Battle of Normandy's another Shug two-year-old that may debut on the Whitney undercard on turf. He's a City of Light. He may need, it seems like the City of Lights, and we've got a bunch of them. They're just a little later developing,
and he
kind of was that way, too. I mean, it wasn't until the tail end of his career. I mean, he really got good. And I got to mention a couple for Christoph. Mademoiselle Jackie, who's an American Pharaoh filly, and Don't Look Back at All, who's a PA bred by Peace and Justice, but she might be okay.
So all potentially up here?
Yes, all four of those.
Always appreciate the pushes.
No refunds, though. we're hoping for the best, but no refunds.
Jay, we appreciate it.
All right.
All right, we'll wrap it up on this Saturday morning. It was a lot of fun, as always. Thanks to Marshall Graham. Thanks to David Aragona. Of course, thanks to Jason Blewett as well. I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America. We'll be back in tomorrow at 9 a.m. Handicapper Support, 10 a.m. My partner Steve Bick will be back in town for Loose on the Lead, so you can look forward to that. Enjoy the races this afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow.
Generations and looking forward to a fifth,
Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pennell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pennell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on!
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.